Hi, this is Paul Metza from the Wall of Power Radio Hour. You are about to hear my buddies, the Cool Cats, Hunter, Doug, and Brett, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Tune in and check those dudes out.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Hunter Haas. And joining us is a man who needs no introduction, member of the Twin Cities Broadcasters Hall of Fame, former chief meteorologist at CARE 11 and WCCO-TV, a columnist for the Star Tribune, founder of numerous companies, and credited with creating software used by meteorologists around the world. He has recently co-authored the brand new book, Caring for Creation, the Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. He is joining us to preview an upcoming presentation at Shepherd of the Hill Presbyterian Church in Chaska for their Tuesday Dialogue Series next week, February 19th, 7 p.m., Paul Douglas. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Hunter. It's great joining you today. I really appreciate you spending some time with me this morning.
Oh, absolutely. And first, I'd like to thank you for coming on and for being a participant of the Tuesday Dialogue Series at actually my church. I became a member of the congregation and a Presbyterian last year, so I'll be joining you next week. And I wanted to ask, what can we expect during your presentation?
Wonderful. Look, I was raised Presbyterian, and I was raised Lutheran, and I was raised Baptist. So I jokingly tell people that my parents were always shopping for a better deal. But I consider myself something of an evangelical Christian. I'm a Christian, and I'm also a scientist, and I've been tracking the weather for, you know, the better part of 50 years, professionally, my career about 40, 45 years. And it was really by keeping an eye on the weather. And when you make a living predicting the weather, Hunter, you live the weather. You're very aware of even small changes in the pattern. And I started noticing changes really in the late 90s and early 2000s. And began talking about these.
So I find the religious angle of your new book, Caring for Creation, the Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and for a Healthy Environment, that it's incredibly important to add to the discourse on climate change. What inspired you to write to an audience of people of faith?
Well, I think I know there's some resistance on the part of many conservatives, and I certainly lean to the right when politically. I come from a very conservative upbringing and see the world, you know, through more of a conservative lens. My fear with climate change is that it was and is being hijacked for political purposes. And I think we should have a healthy debate, as we always do in this country, about policy and what we do about things and what new laws we enact, what road we want to go down. I get nervous when we start to debate science and evidence and data. And this is what made me uncomfortable, that it, for some, this is a litmus test for conservatism. You can't be a conservative if you acknowledge that our actions are having consequences. CO2 is increasing, and the patterns are shifting, and yes, we're warming up over time. I think that's the part that I really wanted to address with Mitch Hescox, who is my co-author, Caring for Creation. He grew up in the coal industry, and kind of had a burning bush moment and realized what he was doing wasn't sustainable. And Mitch and I are working together with the Evangelical Environmental Network, EEN. Mm. And basically, I'm on the board. Mitch is a former Methodist minister, and we have a number of other ministers as well as lay people on the board. But the focus really is on creation care and stewardship. And you know, we've been loaned this amazing gift, this planet, God's creation, and we have an obligation to take care of it and to pass it on for our kids and grandkids. And so at the end of the day, Hunter, it kind of comes down to what obligation do we have for people who come next? If the scientists are right, and I suspect they are, you know, our grandkids, their kids are going to be dealing with a warmer climate, a more volatile climate, and more weather disruption. I tell people, you know, the world isn't ending. Not yet. It's warming. That will have some benefits, but it will also create some new challenges and threats. I think Minnesota is going to be in better shape, certainly, than much of the southern U.S. over the next 30, 50, 70 years. But it's not like a fatal heart attack. It's not like a stroke. It's more like death by a thousand cuts. And we're going to see the impacts increasing as time goes on. More of these extreme, you know, 500,000-year floods, which we're seeing more of in Minnesota. We seem to be seeing larger hail over time, and that's showing up in your insurance premiums. You know, we're all paying more for insurance. Well, there's a reason for that, and that's because we're seeing more extreme weather, more claims are coming in, and the insurance companies have to raise their rates to factor in this increased incidence of extreme weather. So it will have some benefits. Our winters, as a rule, won't be as rough as they were in the 60s and 70s and even the early 80s. We'll still get slapped every now and then. But, I mentioned to people, if Canada ever runs out of cold fronts, if it ever gets to the point where it doesn't snow at all in Minnesota, the planet will have much, much bigger problems. So I'm still secretly relieved when it snows, right?
Yeah. Now, so you said you've already observed some degree changes and that here in Minnesota, we actually might fare better. But how have us in Minnesota, have we already experienced this? And what are some things that people might have noticed over the past 2 decades or so? Have our winters changed? Have our summers changed? Is there anything noticeable right now?
Sure. No, that's a great question. And yes, and many times it's gardeners, it's farmers, it's hunters, it's fishermen, people who are outside spend, you know, a disproportionate amount of time outside who sense some of these changes. The growing season is trending longer. Spring arrives earlier in the year, and fall lingers later, deeper into the season. We get, you know, 50s, 60s into November. That didn't used to happen. So the growing season is consistently longer, and we see that especially in the last 10 to 15 years, an increase in the growing season. We see more midwinter precipitation falling as rain and ice. Even this winter, you know, we're seeing plenty of snow, thank God, in February. I'm happy for snow lovers. It's finally snowing. But we saw heavy rain and ice in late December. We saw rain and ice just a couple of weeks ago. According to Mark Seely, who is a climate historian and meteorologist, the incidence of midwinter ice and rain has quadrupled since the year 2000. So we're not, you know, every now and then we see sub-zero weather. We're not seeing the volume hour after hour, day after day, week after week below zero that we used to experience 40, 50 years ago. So, and that's good news for many, you know, not getting the extreme, extreme cold lingering as long. And we're seeing more flooding. And this is where I think most Minnesotans may have an aha moment or at least scratch their heads. According to the Minnesota DNR, there have been 16 mega rainfall events, these widespread flash floods. 16 since we became a state in 1858. 8 of those 16 events have taken place since 2002.
Wow.
So you know, and that's how I think it's manifesting itself. Minnesota has warmed up about 3 degrees since 1830, which doesn't sound like much. Although I remind people, when's the last time you were 3 degrees warmer?
Yeah.
Running a fever, you probably felt miserable, and there were symptoms. And we're starting to see those symptoms popping up with greater frequency. And one of the big symptoms for me has been these flooding events, these widespread, you know, thousands and thousands of square miles getting 6, 8, 10 inches of rain, especially May and June. Springs are trending wetter, late summer and fall trending drier over time. And the humidity levels, even though the temperatures in the summer are not that much hotter, the dew points, we're seeing more days, Hunter, with dew points in the 70s and even 80, which is tropical humidity. So the heat index is going up because the humidity levels, the amount of water in the air, is rising. And that's consistent with physics. If you warm up the air, it can hold more water, which means higher humidity, more discomfort in the summer from humidity levels, and there's more water in the air for these extreme flooding events as well.
Joining us is meteorologist Paul Douglas. Next week, Paul will be presenting at Shepherd of the Hill Presbyterian Church in Chaska for their Tuesday Dialogue series, February 19th at 7 p.m. So I hear a lot of numbers for a time frame at how long we have to deal with this and address this issue. What are your feelings? What is the timetable? How long do we have to make policy and lifestyle changes?
Well, there's a lot of gloom and doom out there, and I find that most people don't respond well to gloom and doom. It is a serious challenge. It is a global challenge. We have to make sure that we come up with solutions that are fair and equitable across the board, so that if we cut down on our emissions in the United States, China and other countries can't take advantage of that from a competitive standpoint. So there's an opportunity for international cooperation to come up with the solutions we're going to need. We don't need a magical miracle technology. People say, well, if we had fusion energy, we'd be just fine. But here's the deal. God put a free, clean, safe fusion reactor directly above our heads in the form of sunlight. Solar is taking off. Wind is taking off. Wind power, the number one job in the country right now, is wind turbine technician. Six-figure salaries. Right now, the renewable energy world, clean energy, is adding jobs 12 times faster than the rest of the economy. It's not a fad. It's a trend. And I'm encouraged for two reasons, Hunter. One is that we have the technology. We just need to go faster. We need to turn up the dial and deploy more clean, renewable energy. I would argue that we probably need to keep the nuclear power plants going. I'm not crazy about nuclear, but the good thing about nuclear energy, it doesn't emit any CO2 into the atmosphere. So if we're serious about bringing down CO2 levels, and we can keep these plants going safely, and I realize there are issues with waste storage, et cetera, but this is a matter of pick your poison. You know, what is the lesser evil here? And I think we have to find ways to lower CO2 emissions without derailing the economy. And if we're smart, you know, people talk about a moonshot, the Manhattan Project. If we're smart, we will create the technologies here in the United States to be able to keep the lights on, the economy powered up, people working, but with a lighter footprint on God's creation, with less pollution, short-term pollution that causes asthma and other respiratory problems, and longer-term greenhouse gas pollution, which is causing changes in the climate. So I'm optimistic that we're going to figure this out. We need to go faster. And the fact that this has become something of a political football is concerning. At the end of the day, there are no Republican or Democrat thermometers. I mean, it's the data is the data. I think we should debate policy. We shouldn't debate the science. And as a Christian, what I'm trying to do at Shepherd of the Hills for this talk is weave together sort of my story, how I came to the realization that, yes, the climate is changing, and it's showing up in the weather, and weaving together faith and science. As I tell people in my talks, Hunter, science is essential, but it's incomplete. It's not the only way of looking at reality, and my faith is important to me. And I think you can be a good Christian and still acknowledge what's happening and come up with ways to hopefully improve our situation. And again, at the end of the day, this is not about polar bears. This is about our kids and their kids. And what kind of world do we want for our kids? We have something very special in Minnesota with the lakes. The Minnesota, what's the term? The whole Minnesota nice thing, I think, really tends to describe the people more than the environment. But there's something very special here. There's something magical about Minnesota, and I just want to make sure that my future grandkids and yours can enjoy the same Minnesota that we enjoyed. And I do worry about the changes that are taking place. And I think we just need to keep our eyes wide open and have a respect for science and scientists and just try to come up with ways to address this that are true to our faith and our beliefs and our ideology. But I don't think we should ignore it. When we ignore scientists, bad things often result. We need to figure it out. And I still think there's a smart way that people of faith can rally around and acknowledge that, yes, we should keep an eye on this. We should do something about this. Let's debate ways to clean everything up. And, you know, we are stewards of God's creation. Let's take that seriously. And so I'm just going to present a few ideas on how we might be able to do that. Things we can agree on when it comes to protecting the place we love.
Now, before we go, I want to give you the chance to, again, plug your book and also offer any recommendations of any bookshops or websites that you suggest listeners go to acquire your book.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, no, I appreciate that. The shameless plug. It's called Caring for Creation, the Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. I think the best place would just be to go to Amazon.com would probably be the easiest way if you're interested. I think they still have some copies of the book. And again, I was frustrated. There are a lot of scientific books out there, and there are books on faith, but I didn't find many that tried to include both and weave both science and faith together into one narrative to describe the problem and then describe some possible solutions. Solutions that I think might be acceptable to people of faith. This shouldn't be a litmus test for conservatism. We can argue about solutions and what might work, what won't work, but let's just keep our eyes wide open and be open to data and facts and evidence. And if you really drill down, Hunter, if you take the time to really look at the data, it's either the mother of all coincidences or the greatest conspiracy ever hoisted on mankind, or it's true. And, you know, I've done a lot of research over 30 years, and if I've gone through a lot of data. I hoped that the scientists were wrong. I was skeptical for the longest time. But, you know, year after year after year of just, you know, freakish weather, going back, looking at the peer-reviewed science, and you're left with quite a decision to make, you know. And I think you can still have a very conservative mindset and ideology and outlook on life and acknowledge that actions have consequences. Man has been given free will. And, you know, we have the ability to use that free will for good or for evil. And I just think we can keep the lights on, keep the economy growing, keep people employed with less pollution. And I think we have an obligation as followers of Christ to keep our eyes wide open and to protect, you know, his Father's home, our home, and to protect our children and their children and make sure they grow up in a world where they're not constantly reeling from the effects of a more volatile climate and crazier weather patterns. So I'm optimistic, and I hope to convey that sense of optimism. It's not a gloom and doom, woe is us. When people hear gloom and doom, they curl up in the fetal position, they shut down, and it's much easier to deny, to say, hey, nah, this isn't happening, that's bunk. It's easier to deny it. But I think we have an obligation, again, to keep our eyes wide open.
We've been joined by meteorologist Paul Douglas, and next week Paul will be presenting at Shepherd of the Hill Presbyterian Church in Chaska, presented by Citizens Climate Lobby and AM 950. It's located at 145 Engler Boulevard in Chaska, Minnesota. And thank you so much, Paul, for joining us and for all that you do protecting the planet.
I appreciate the time, Hunter, and we'll see you out there at Shepherd of the Hills. And thank you for the time. I really appreciate it, sir.
Absolutely. I will see you next week.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Take care.